This is Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread Podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 215 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm greatly pleased to host Christine Seymour, Vice President Strategy and M&A for Smart Infrastructure at Siemens. Christine calls herself a management consultant in recovery, solving commercial problems with execution, creativity, and teamwork. For the past 23 years, she has led key functions at Siemens, Honeywell, and John Crane to grow revenue and gain share through general management, strategy, marketing, business development, and partnerships. She's crossed chasms, blueprinted services, generated new business models, and established blue oceans. Along the way, rebooting marketing, growing lifetime value, reducing customer acquisition costs, adding distributors, enabling direct selling, launching new products, building brands, and grappling with disruptive technology. Christine is passionate about the future of digital transformation, AI, IoT, smart buildings, connected supply chains, industrial software, and sustainability. She's a constant advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI as it's known, and has been recognized as an outstanding people leader, guiding and coaching top talent and global teams to success. Christine, with that introduction, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Thanks so much, Ken. It's really great to be here. So I've been speaking with you and the Momenta staff and following your podcast for a few years. Thanks for having me.
Great. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it has been a lot of fun to try to coordinate this. So I'm glad we finally had the opportunity to get together and tell your personal story, but also the story of what you're doing at Siemens now, because I think it's all quite compelling. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And so let me ask you, what would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey.
So I would say that my digital thread is sitting at that intersection of operations and technology. We're adding digitalization now to manufacturing or energy or building management. And that allows us to predict future asset performance and arm all of our field service and plant floor workers with the knowledge that they need at the right time that they need it. There are three strings that kind of braid together for me for that digital thread. I think my industrial domain expertise is an important part of this, which started very early. Honestly, my dad was an old GE manufacturing guy who later rose in other companies to the rank of CEO. But what that means is that I grew up spending time in factories, and that affects you. I later applied that DNA to study industrial engineering in college. And while I had not been in a manufacturing role for a long, long time, later at Siemens, at John Crane, and at Honeywell, this backdrop, it's been able to help me tie the OT to the IT side of the equation. And I think that's important. Along the side, though, of the IT and the tech side, I love innovation as a strategy. And very early in my career, at the old HP, I started working. And that's where I first actually fell in love with innovation, what technology could do to improve outcomes for our customers. And we were applying our tech at that time, which now seems like the Stone Age. But to customer problems, that was part of our strategy and our culture. So then later at other companies like Siemens, I had the opportunity to really see that in action. I joined this internal team. And for a few years, we consulted with the Siemens operating companies. I got to travel and see different business models. But innovation was part of the core competence of each of those Siemens groups. And that was pretty exciting for me to see, definitely formative. And later on, I really got to expand my customer focus, the third string in that braid of my digital thread. I would say that the Siemens industrial sector where I landed after doing that consulting is I was able to run a couple of small businesses. I added channel partners, end user salespeople. I ran business development, a number of the things you mentioned in the intro. What was happening was I was ending up putting the customer at the core of all my decision-making processes. So even when I was headhunted away to go move into marketing at John Crane, which is a Chicago-based industrial company that was working on things in the digital space. And I was later promoted to the head of global marketing. Still, the customer centricity, their buyer's journey, the challenges they have, so they can knowledgeably understand their operations and predict when a critical pump or a compressor might fail. That was the heart of my work. And, you know, that customer focus has stayed with me for a long time.
What a beautiful triad of experience, the industrial side or OT innovation, or, you know, really the IT side, and certainly a strong focus on the customer and use cases. I found it interesting you qualified HP as more IT, and very old engineers will remember that HPIB and GPIB was the original bus structure for a lot of data acquisition that became process right. control systems. So it's, right. it's HP has a much stronger bridge than just the IT side. And
that's right. And, that's yeah. absolutely true.
Yep. So look, you've got a great track record as an executive change agent across several of these marquee industrial companies. You mentioned a little bit the familial connection, but what attracted you to the industrial space?
Well, I guess, you know, beside what I described before, and the short answer is going to be that industrial is really complex. There are a lot of opportunities for improvement. And I think I really just like the problem solving, especially the gnarly problems, genuinely like operations in general. It's not just the fact that I'm an industrial engineer. I think anyone needs to like operations and want to understand it, because that's how you understand what operations customers' jobs are, no matter what software technology you're selling. So customers are really tasked with figuring out how to improve, say, energy efficiency on their sustainability strategy. They need to run safer plants, right, for their workers, for the community. They need to operate and monitor sustainable buildings in the infrastructure space and smart buildings. They want to drive down costs. They want to charge their new electric fleets. They want to optimize their electrical grids because they're using sustainable energy. And you need a little bit of operation street cred to help them, not just a shiny new software offering. I do think that right now in this whole industrial space with digitalization, the mix of core industrial players, the big tech and the cloud providers, plus some of the smaller software startups, is creating an interesting dynamic in the space. Everyone, it seems, is claiming some level of expertise in digital transformation. And I think there will be interesting ecosystems that develop across all those diverse players to solve some of these big gnarly problems for operators. And I just hope everyone remembers to bring operations to the table, because that's what you need in the industrial space.
Yeah, clearly so. And I know, you know, with your career sitting at that intersection of IT and OT, you've seen both sides of it, both the catalytic technology sure. in the form of IT, but the real world constraints and use cases and outcomes that are needed on the OT side. So it's a rare skill to be able to truly sit on both sides of that. And you clearly have that. One of the other things I noted was, you know, what I'll generally call professional dexterity. You seem equally adept at marketing, strategy, general management. To what do you attribute this ability to, you know, equally handle all of those types of usually very different personas and tasks?
Well, so that's totally interesting, Ken, because I have been called a triple threat before. And whenever that comes up, it makes me a little self-conscious. So if I were to say where that really comes from and the ability to move to those different types of management and leadership capabilities, being fluid in that means that you have to have deep and varied experiences. So everything I've mentioned earlier has been incredibly impactful for me. I think that I may have always been good at the basics of what we call strategic marketing sometimes, the analysis, horizon scanning, competitive intelligence. That's all part of strategy, but think about it, it's really a precursor to the tactical side of marketing and demand gen. And if you're doing M&A, doing your synergy analysis and portfolio understanding, and then how you're going to manage your business unit or your division as a general manager. So that is really important, like a building block. And I've been lucky enough to have had some really tough assignments, diverse experience. In an innovation-driven culture, you really have to iterate quickly. In performance-driven cultures, the demand is that you have to deliver. I've done both. And I genuinely like thinking outside the box on the strategy side, but I'm a little competitive. And I also like to win, which plays well for marketing and P&L management, frankly.
So what's interesting is if we, I guess, put a point on it, if I look at your time at Honeywell, it's probably a great example of this dexterity. You moved from CMO at their Connected Industrials group to head of strategy at the Connected Enterprise team. What was your remit there and across both roles, actually, and what are you most proud?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I do see the Honeywell Connected Enterprise, the software business there at Honeywell, really provided a great experience for me. The charter of my first role was in the Connected Industrial space, so that's that industrial software. And my team included a focus on product marketing, partnerships. So I created some positioning and target marketing and key verticals, sales playbooks, kind of the usual things you need to do to carve up your market and do the right strategic marketing. My team supported product launches with the PMs. And I did drive a portion of our, at least our industrial portion at the larger strategic plan at that time and getting alignment. But I also supported several small partnerships, including Microsoft. I guess when I look back and what I'll probably call out might seem like a really small thing, but I was most proud, if I really think about it, of establishing and hosting an executive level customer advisory council. A lot of people have customer advisory councils, but if you imagine a really insightful circle, global enterprise leaders providing strategic feedback live to your product teams and a number of other people, it's really powerful stuff. And then the remit for my next role when I shifted over to strategy for all of Honeywell Connected Enterprise. So now I've got buildings and life science, and I'm looking at a lot of different elements of this. That really was mainly focused on the strategic plan, plus various strategic projects, right? I would support my M&A partner in crime, respond to various special requests, competitive intelligence. I worked previously on partnerships. This really continued. I drove a partnership ecosystem strategy within HCE to manage both the go-to-market and the technology side. And so in addition to countless hours strategic plan, I'm really proud of the framework that I created for partnering and gaining that buy-in across the organization.
I like the fact you refer to standing between Microsoft and Honeywell as a small partnership. I think that puts a lot into context, and you're being awfully humble there. So let's bring it up to date then. So you recently took your next step up, really, as Vice President of Strategy and M&A for the smart infrastructure business in the U.S. for Siemens. You, of course, already had a prior 14-year tenure at the company. So what attracted you back to Siemens, and what is your key focus?
So what attracted me back to Siemens was that I really liked how Siemens is walking the talk, and I wanted to be a part of that. You know, my view was from the outside, and it was interesting, especially in the last few years, to see Siemens bringing together this real physical world and the digital world in a number of things that Siemens is doing. And I was thinking what that would mean for my next few years, possibly pinnacle years, as a leader. And for instance, we're integrating our software and our hardware. We're creating smart grids, buildings that operate and run more efficiently. Sustainability is huge as a major secular trend, and it's baked into everything. So here we are, like really walking that talk. We're helping our customers address the environmental challenges, but also save some money and be fiscally conscientious, incorporating the digitalization into their sustainable solutions. And many of them already have the strategies, just like helping them figure out how to make it happen. And of course, there's always the people factor, right? When you're going to go to a company. So this is not really only the leadership teamwork culture that I knew from before, but on a broader scale, I really see Siemens as this global player training the workforce of the future. So interestingly, we have a lot of programs. We had a lot of programs before with apprenticeships, internships, et cetera, training and development, for instance. And a lot of the people that went through those programs when I was at Siemens years ago are now in management positions and doing really well. So it's great to see that that plays into it. So my key focus, I now get to be part of this great technology company. This time I'm focusing on the smart infrastructure side of it, not as much on the industrial side this time around. And I'm leading and driving organic and inorganic strategic projects. I'm pretty excited about that. I found it to be a very attractive value proposition for me to return.
What a good time to be doing that, given trends of reshoring, moves to, you know, the energy transition or move to renewables. coming out of COVID, the whole idea of remote operations and the new importance of that. So I'd say a great role in our already great company, but at a perfect time. You talked about ecosystem earlier, and I'd like to drill down specifically on your M&A role, because in essence, you're watching the ecosystem, but also looking to see how Siemens can participate greater in specific areas. What sectors and types of companies are you looking for these days?
Sure. Obviously, I can't speak to specifics, but I can talk about some of those types of companies. And as you can imagine, we're always going to keep an eye on those businesses that are out there in the main areas that Siemens operates in: manufacturing, infrastructure, and mobility. So there's some focus areas in there. There's focusing on a diverse portfolio. So we've always maintained an interest in many sectors and ensuring that we stay at this cutting edge of technology and infrastructure. So that's playing a factor in what I'm looking at and how I'm looking at it. And in smart infrastructures specifically, we're really interested in startups and established companies that are innovating in a few areas like sustainable energy, smart buildings, smart spaces, if you will, and intelligent transportation systems. The area that is really important to us in those types of companies would be companies that are facilitating digital integration. That's really important, bridging that gap between what I described earlier as the digital and the physical world and real world. And there is another focus area. This is along the idea of sustainability, is really the decentralized energy system. So there's a global shift toward more renewables, decentralized energy systems. I mean, there are a lot of trends out there, but this is a really interesting point in the history of how we use energy and manage that. And so we're looking at businesses that can help enhance grid resiliency and adaptability. You know, just backing up for a second, I'm sitting in the US. And so I'm responsible for this for the US. And the US is still seen as largest market globally. And over the last few years, about 4 years, we've invested about $400 million just to grow our manufacturing footprint in the US, and over $2.5 billion in acquisitions. So people might always think of Siemens as a German-based company and making decisions from that. But if you look at our M&A activities in the US in the last 4 years alone, $2.5 billion, $3 billion that we've been focused on it all in, so that's certainly impactful.
Yeah, really is. And you're right. There is a common notion that you are the leader in certainly Germany and in Europe. But it's interesting to see the U.S. remain a large and, you know, continue to grow important market for you, especially around energy, which I think is, again, great time. It's interesting, also an interesting time to be in M&A because you've got a background where you've been part of this ecosystem in the past in the digital industry space. You know, when I compare today with some of the past activities you've done, you know, there's certainly a very different macroeconomic factors challenging startup landscapes. How do you see this landscape today comparing to that of your earlier roles in strategy and corp dev?
Right. Absolutely. Great question. I find it interesting to be in M&A right now at what I view as this critical inflection point, with digital playing such a strong role. When I reflect on my journey in strategy and now adding the M&A, not just supporting M&A, although I've been part of it, right, driving some of that. The digital industry space today presents a unique blend of opportunities and also challenges. And as you mentioned, they are shaped really significantly by certain macroeconomic dynamics. So I think this M&A landscape is drastically different from even just a couple of years ago. There's this accelerated pace of technology and the change, whether that's in AI or cloud or how we manage data, contextualize it, et cetera. You know, that's pretty exciting. I do think going along with that, though, is a heightened level of due diligence, right? So on the macroeconomic side, especially during uncertain times, this means that what we do on the due diligence has to be even more rigorous than anything we've done before, right? So we really need to ensure two things. We have to make sure those acquisitions not only align with our current goals, our current strategy, and some near-term expectations, but that we also future-proof our strategies down the road. So that just means a lot of extra work on the due diligence side and the rigor applied to that. And then I think also we need to balance the innovation and the ongoing stability of investments we make. So startups today are really pushing the envelope in digital innovation, but sometimes they face challenges in scaling and sustaining their business models. So all of these previous roles for me have taught me the value of balancing that really fantastic and attractive innovative spark with some operational stability. So
that's a tough balance to achieve. We're venture capital investors, of course, in digital industry. And so I think digitization of energy, manufacturing, smart spaces, supply chain. And with that in mind, it's not the same VC landscape and or playbook that you're going to work if it's social media companies you're investing in or B2C right. or, you know, pick your sector. Because one, there are very strong incumbent players that will always be there. Siemens will always be there. Nobody ever got fired for bringing in Siemens, right? And the same can go for all of your peers out there. And so you've got to work with those giants and in pretty well-regulated and very conservative industries. And so the reality is it's a much different playbook you apply here. And so I think you did a good job of talking about innovation and stability. Somebody told me once there was a startup talking about being a disruptive startup. And he said, the last thing I want in my factory is disruption.
Absolutely.
Yep. And the same certainly could be said for energy. None of us get excited about that. So
that's very true. Very, very true, right? That resilience is key.
Absolutely it is. And so, you know, it's interesting, as I mentioned earlier, it's an important crossroad right now, given reshoring, energy transition, and we'll throw in their labor challenges, right?
Oh, sure.
What are some of the key trends you're watching relative to the future of industry?
So, you know, there are a lot of them. I'm sure if I name them, some of these are going to be the expected answers. But, you know, as we're all navigating this transformative phase, there are a lot of pivotal trends that I think we can focus on. And I think these are going to define this next chapter of our industrial revolution. A few just to highlight, we all used to say go global, right? That was a mantra in the 90s and since then. But one of the prominent trends, as you mentioned, with reshoring and some other things, is this move toward what Siemens actually calls glocalization. So glocalizing to us is this balance between having global strategies and local adaptations. And so it does underscore Siemens USA, which again is the largest single market for Siemens, the commitment that we have to delivering globally consistent solutions. But that doesn't mean everything's exactly the same. Those are tailored to address the needs of all of the local markets that we serve. And this is important because with increasing geopolitical uncertainties and the macroeconomic trends, there's a shift toward globalizing production, but still being able to innovate globally. Another trend is around sustainability. No surprise there. Green energy. This energy transition is absolutely paramount. The push toward any more sustainable and renewable energy sources, that is driving changes across all of automation, especially in terms of energy efficiency and grid adaptability in many cases to new sources of energy and how that's managed. And then I'd be remiss not to mention AI ML. So as labor challenges certainly do, we expect continue to persist. AI and machine learning are going to be pivotal. I see that enhancing productivity, being able to predict your maintenance needs, and just in general, ensuring quality control. You know, I think that that's a really important part of this digitization combined with automation. And then finally, we talk about the ecosystems, but I do really believe that this future of industry lies in creating a lot of interconnected ecosystems. So data ends up being seamlessly shared, processes get optimized in real time. And businesses are able to adapt really swiftly to the changing market circumstances and the operational circumstances. So this is where we tend to work with a lot of our digital offerings in this space.
Given your bullet there around AI and machine learning, it's interesting to see the impact that generative AI models like ChatGPT have had on the expectations of OT leaders and workers, right? If
Absolutely.
I can do it at home on my browser, why can't I ask my factory how to run it more effectively, right?
Absolutely.
And so for us and our startups that, you know, we're about 50 portfolio companies, and increasingly they are all getting that same question, right? How can I apply this? How can I have user experiences that more closely mirror that of ChatGPT? And so I suspect that's going to drive an awful lot of at least raising the bar exercises.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I really do believe that the AI and what we're working on with that is driven by operations, actually, and the intense focus on more productivity, right? Constantly improving where you were last year, last quarter, it has to get better next time. So AI is going to be a big part of making that work.
Yeah, yeah. And I think rightfully so. You talked earlier about it being a way to augment labor and enhance the productivity of labor, which is going to be continued to be a key, call it the digital equivalent of robots, right? Or cobots,
yes.
Probably. Yeah.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we certainly see the same. So let's shift gears. I noted that you're a constant advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. And I appreciate that, especially given that the industrial space that we tend to operate in is, you know, still very male dominated. So can you tell us a bit about this passion and how you brought this to the companies you work with?
Sure. I think my personal passion for DEI really started very early. A lot of women of my generation, when we were in college, we saw that less than 1 in 5 of the engineering students were women. And if you look at the statistics, at least in the US for engineering graduates, they really haven't improved that much since, hovering at or below about 20%. And so then you look at other diversity groups and you see it's been even worse for Hispanic engineering graduates, which have been around 12 or 13%, and African-American engineering graduates only around 4 or 5%. So I think that's when it started, that there wasn't representation of everyone in this wide and exciting field. And I know the statistics on the computer science majors are somewhat similar to the engineering numbers as well. Later, when I was at Siemens, right, years later, I was able to help create and lead we had a lot of different women's affinity groups, and we drove that to one cohesive women's information network at Siemens that is really driving collaborative efforts and mentoring and other programs. And it's fun to come back to Siemens and see that it's still active over a decade later, right? So, you know, that's, you know, I'm kind of proud of that. On a personal level, I'll be honest, I've had the honor to mentor diverse mid-level leaders and early career high potentials. I enjoy doing it. And I think that even if you don't have very many diverse people, if you will, on your own team, mentoring others actually forces you to co-create and step out of your comfort zone a bit and do that work with people from different backgrounds. They have different experiences in their life than you have. And once you've done that and gotten comfortable with it, then it's really easy to become an ally. And I think allyship is part of the DEI story. And we have to keep that in mind in the industrial space, in the technology space, because you don't always see as much diversity as you would expect or see in other markets, other industries. So if you're in a meeting, right, once you've been able to become an ally, you're actually more naturally and subconsciously valuing input from every single person on your video call or in the conference room, and especially those people who are not in the majority. You will stop and ask them to speak up and to repeat an idea maybe they bravely offered. This diversity of thought is driving strong decision-making and better teams. And when you're doing that, it's forcing everyone around you to acknowledge some of their own unconscious biases, which I firmly believe in, and to be aware of it, to recognize it, and, you know, to work and combat it. Siemens today still has, and this is partly why I was happy to return, was a workplace that is striving both on the evidence side with the policies and the practices for inclusive and equitable attitudes, and that's driving cultural messages. All of this just reinforces the importance of diversity. It's embedded in our business goals. In fact, it drives how we work with our partners, how we hire talent, how we build teams for projects, and how we even interact with our customers. So here's this big global multicultural technology organization of Siemens that's empowering all of our people and is encouraging that growth mindset I talked about.
You know, traditionally DEI has been a nice to have. It's one of those goals we want to achieve in terms of balance there. But I'd offer with the labor challenges, if countries continue to reshore and want to continue to grow, it is now an absolute necessity. And it's interesting to see the EU Commission, our listeners will know we're fond of the Industry 5 efforts that they've been pushing. And one of the three pillars there is human centricity. And originally we thought, okay, it's interesting, yeah, basically making sure that automation is put there just to augment humans. But what the story that comes out as you talk with people working in this is inclusion. It is a mechanism for inclusion and equality on the factory floor. Why should your muscle dexterity determine what type of jobs you can do on the factory floor, right? Automation should be able to help augment that.
So, you know, I think it's really interesting that a lot of governments and other organizations are really driving this. I think that it behooves all of us to look at what we're doing actually on the AI side and ensure that we're combating and preventing any bias from getting baked into that before we roll it out. Because at the end of the day, that AI is impacting the people that are going to be doing the work. And so we have an opportunity here to make sure that we're open and inclusive when we're creating that AI.
Yeah, definitely a great point. And I think it brings a whole new strength, this idea of inclusivity. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of that, especially relative to industry. Final question, always like to ask, you know, where do you find your personal inspiration?
So Ken, I think I'm mostly inspired by some of these incredible individuals that I have been really privileged to work for, to work with, and some of the people I've managed. There are a lot of stars from a lot of fields of software consulting, strategy, and corporate dev, engineering, and of course, operations. And I often think of them when I need inspiration at a tough decision point, right? I ask myself, what would Stuart do here, or Judy, or Pierce, or Patrick, or Ian? Those people are like my personal virtual board of directors that I think of, and they're very inspiring leaders. On some of the other inspiration, I do love to read. So on books, good stories never fail to inspire me. So from way back when, Soul of a New Machine won the Pulitzer, to a more modern day story on Moneyball, I love all of that, right? Because there's a story with it. But there is a business author who focuses on writing business books, but in the form of a story that's a fable, and that's Patrick Lencioni. And Patrick's been really successful with a lot of his books, I think partly because they're really easy to read. And also his Five Dysfunctions of a Team, I think is probably his biggest bestseller. But honestly, he's written so many good ones. And I think that Death by Meeting should be mandatory reading for anyone who is in a leadership role. It's a great little book on that. There's so many books, so little time, Ken. I could throw in Blue Ocean Strategy and The Lean Startup and Business Model Generation. Love all of those. But I also, you know, there's not a lot of time, and I like podcasts and audiobooks a lot. So beside, of course, Momenta's Digital Thread, I've been able to find inspiration in some of the different TED audio channels because you have a lot of people from different areas, not only business. And I really like to look at what's going on with society and also with the psychology of the self and how we can drive leadership. So some of the popular ones like Brené Brown and Simon Sinek are out there. And there's a lot of quick doses of inspiration even if you only have 15 minutes. And I'm personally a big fan of Brené Brown, especially her book, Daring Greatly. That's definitely worthy of just like the inspiration bookshelf all by itself.
Wow. Speaking of a bookshelf, so now I know where you get your professional dexterity. It's your intellectual diversity. And that brings it all together and closes the loop on it. So, Christine, it's been an absolutely great conversation. I really appreciate you sharing your time and insights with us today.
I appreciate it, Ken. Thanks so much. And I'm glad we could really make this happen.
Absolutely. I am as well. And I know we've known each other through several steps of your career. I know the best days are ahead in terms of the accomplishments you're making. And so I look forward to hopefully joining you on that journey. So this has been Christine Seymour, Vice President Strategy and M&A for Smart Infrastructure at Siemens. Thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archive versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.